12th Emergency Medical Care Committee. Call the meeting to order. First, we'll start with introductions and announcements. I'll just announce myself. I was reappointed to the committee through the Society of Orange County Emergency Physicians, which is a subsection of the Orange County Medical Association. So I'll be doing another two-year term. Next, we'll move on to the approval of the previous minutes, and I'll let the committee members take a look at these minutes as we go through the meeting, and I'll come back and get an approval if you haven't looked at them already. Next on the agenda is the OCEMS report and correspondence. First, the medical director's report, Dr. Schultz.
All right, there isn't a lot of activity other than what's already on the agenda, but there's a couple of things that's probably worth mentioning. First of all, we have a program called a CCERC, which is a Comprehensive Children's Emergency Receiving Center program. There are two facilities that participate. One is Children's Hospital of Orange County, and one is Mission. We have been fine-tuning this program over time. The most recent addition is to bring Chalk up as a base station. And so we had a pilot project that was going forward to allow them to come up to speed as a full base station within Orange County. And they are just about done with their pilot project. We've seen most of the data. It all looks pretty good. And so we'll have a final review, but we're looking like we're probably going to be inclined to go ahead and take them off pilot and make them a full base station. The other thing is there's a project that's been going on in Huntington Beach Fire Department over the last year called Pit Crew CPR, which is also a pilot project looking at slightly different ways of doing CPR and examining the outcomes. And again, we've not seen the final data, but most of the data we reviewed has been very promising. So it looks like we're probably going to take them off pilot later this month, and this will become over time a phase-in for how we will do business in Orange County. This will initially be a voluntary program that other fire departments can look at and adjust, and then probably within some fixed time, with a year, 18 months, I don't know yet, we'll go ahead and make that the policy for Orange County.
Maybe just for the people in attendance, if you could just give a brief explanation of Pit Crew CPR.
Sure. Yeah, I think most of us are familiar with NASCAR and the how the pit crews work. They have very specific assigned tasks. They're timed. They drill on that task over and over again. There's a lot of performance metrics that they have to meet. They take that philosophy on cardiac arrest and do the same thing. So there are individuals assigned around the patient, each with a specific task. They have monitors for time that they rotate the tasks around. They have devices that give them input as to the depth of CPR, how fast they're doing it, their recoil, lots of details. So there's a lot of information coming back, and there's a few other things that they do. If it's a witness cardiac arrest, they don't initially bag them. They use passive ventilation. And all of these things have actually, we're not the first ones to do this. This has been something that's been going on in other institutions. And the two that I'm familiar with have also reported substantially improved outcomes, which is what drove our pilot to begin with. And we are seeing exactly that same thing now, a doubling of our return of spontaneous circulation. So it's not like 3% to 6%. It's like approaching 50% return of spontaneous circulation. So again, I haven't seen the final data yet, but it's looking fairly promising.
Thank you. Anything else on your report?
No.
Next is the hospital diversion report, which is attachment number 2 in the agenda. It's got the county's diversion numbers. It looks like we're doing pretty well for the past couple of months. Any other comments?
Mr. Johnson, do you have anything to add to the either this report or the APOT report, the next one?
No, unless there are any questions from the board.
You feel like we're meeting our goals as a county with our diversion times and our APOT times?
And like you mentioned, Dr. Bitter, the last few months does look like it's we're doing pretty good. We tend to see a blip in the beginning of the year. Traditionally, that's been our high census, high activity, flu activity time of year. It came a little bit later this year. We've seen that happen the last couple of years, but it tends to level out as we get past that.
Right.
And that's exactly what's been happening.
Thank you. Next on the agenda is the 911 emergency ambulance transport contract performance third quarter.
Normally, we would have one of our colleagues here to present this information. He's on a medical leave and so is not able to attend today. I don't know the details, but in general, I've not heard any unusual issues or problems with their performance to date. All the information is in your packet if you want to review it, but I'm not aware of any particular significant outliers with any of this stuff.
Thank you. And then lastly, under correspondence, EMS correspondence, which is attachment number 5.
You might want to just take a quick look at that and make sure you don't have any questions about any of the issues that are reflected in those correspondence.
Do you think that one of the things in the correspondence was that West Anaheim Medical Center had a suspension of their cardiovascular receiving status? Do you think that they will reapply or come back online?
We just did a survey that was led by Mr. Johnson and spent about 3 or 4 hours there, got a lot of information, and we're resynthesizing that data, and we'll be able to make a recommendation at some point in the future. Currently, they remain on suspension until we're able to review what they provided and make a decision.
Thank you. Any other questions from the committee members on any of the correspondence? Next on the agenda is the EMCC Advisory Subcommittee and Advisory Group reports.
Two of the committees have really no burning issues to bring to this committee. One of them is the Facilities Advisory Committee. They just met 2 days ago, and basically it was a fairly mundane meeting without any fireworks or anything in particular of interest to this committee. Also, the County Paramedic Advisory Committee, which met on the 10th, also had no issues to present. The Education and Training Advisory Committee met on the 17th of April. Their next meeting is the end of this month. And issue that came up there is new scope of practice. And they were looking specifically at how Orange County EMS would redefine the scope of practice. So there are two things that we are not going to be including. One is the use of activated charcoal, and the other is aspirin by EMTs. And so that came up and was approved by the committee. And then for the Transportation Advisory Committee, they met on the 24th of April, and their next meeting is also the end of this month. And they discussed the new mandatory training requirement for EMTs on naloxone, the use of EpiPens and glucometers, and how that would be documented by training facilities, and came up with some recommendations to use new documentation to provide that information. So that training is ongoing. And for EMTs that have already been trained, they'll get a separate certificate that specifies that they've been trained on those three issues.
And with the Narcan, is that nasal or is that injectable, or what form do they administer?
This would be in any form. They would be empowered to use this either intranasal or they don't do injections, but they would be able to administer the same as any public health or public service agency.
Okay. Anything else on those?
No.
No. Okay. I take a recommendation to approve the minutes. I've looked at them and don't have any issues. We have a first and a second.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Unanimous approval. Thank you. Next, unfinished business, Orange County EMS Policy and Procedure 714, Maximum Emergency Ground Ambulance Rates, Attachment Number 6.
Ms. McConnell was going to be here, but got called away at the last minute. But when I passed her in the hallway, I asked her, is there any issues on this? And she said, no, the ambulance rates have been approved, and they go into effect July 1st. And she had nothing else really to bring to the committee.
Thank you. Next, under informational items, American College of Surgeons Trauma System Evaluation.
Mr. Johnson, could you comment on that, since you're the one that's doing all the work on it?
I'll come up so it's a little easier for everybody to hear. The American College of Surgeons is a national agency that has been accrediting our trauma centers here in Orange County for many, many years, several decades. They also go out and they survey and accredit systems such as state
agencies. And in California, we've had, California went through one a couple of years ago, and another county went through one a couple of years ago. So this has been a process for us for the last couple of years as we start seeing some changes in our system. Hospitals that are interested in looking at our trauma system. And we did a white paper 2 years ago, and based on the feedback that we received from that white paper, we brought up the idea of having ACS come out and actually do a system, a trauma system survey of our Orange County trauma system. As we went through that whole process, we are scheduled to have them come out next week. And part of that included submitting a lot of information to the team that's coming out. They will come out, they will look at our, not only our trauma centers, but they'll also look at our non-trauma centers. They'll look at our patient flow. They'll look at our integration of all the different stakeholders, including pre-hospital. They'll look at some of the individual departments in the county as well that either directly or indirectly impact that system, like the coroner's office or other agencies that information is collected on, epidemiology, things like that. One of the other areas that they look at is disaster response. They look at data collection, how we collect our data, how we analyze it, how we report on it. It's a pretty comprehensive, thorough evaluation of it, of our system. At the end of it, they will give us a preliminary report. They'll go back. The team will write up an official report with recommendations for us and submit that to us, and we will be sharing that with the public. And we hope the goal of it will be to give us a lot of good recommendations and feedback on how we can improve our trauma system. So basically, that's the process, and that's what's going to be happening next week.
And then they'll submit some formal report back?
Correct, yes. Okay. So they will give us a brief exit summary at the end of the week, and then they will go back. Their team, their analysts that they use will work on whatever data or information that has been submitted to them. The other thing to keep in mind, too, is that we've shared the this information with all the stakeholders. We've had it posted on our website as well. We've also solicited public comments from different groups, too. And all this information, letters that we've received, comments that we've received have been shared with the survey team as well. So they come in pretty prepared, knowing what are what some of the you know, concerns or issues or questions that you know, we may have, and that's what they will hopefully give us some guidance on and some recommendations on.
Great. Well, thank you for that update. Any questions from any of the committee members? Yes.
Will the ultimate report and recommendations that submitted be mandatory to be implemented, or are these just suggestions that each individual trauma center, et cetera, will just use and implement as they see fit?
So the evaluation isn't of specific trauma centers. It's of our system itself. So a lot of the recommendations will be given back to the EMS agency as the lead agency. But it actually will be shared with all the stakeholders, too. So they are recommendations. But the team that's coming out, these are experts in their field, national, international in some cases, experts in their field. They come from trauma systems themselves, from the academic setting, from the clinical settings, and they represent pretty much the people that set the standards for trauma in the country. But again, to answer your question, they are recommendations. We hope that we'll get, we know that we have opportunities to improve our system, everybody does, and that's, we hope that we'll get some good information that will help guide us in how we manage our system for the next several years.
And who's paying for these folks to come out and do this evaluation?
So this was something that was paid by the agency, the healthcare agency. We entered into an agreement with them, and the money's been paid for them to come out to do the survey.
Do you know how much it's going to cost?
Do you recall how much it was? About?
I don't remember.
$75,000.
Yeah.
Travel, their time.
It's pretty good for the big group.
So they actually, they're doing everything with that contracted amount. Their transportation, lodging, they're providing the food, they're paying their surveyors, they're providing us with that, with the report that we'll be sharing.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Oh, thank you, David.
All right, thank you.
Next, under new business, these are informational items. Number one is public safety power shutoffs.
I can take that if you want. Mm-hmm. So under attachment 7 in your agenda packet, you'll see a brief on public safety power shutoffs. This is a process in which Southern California Edison will, during high extreme fire weather conditions, will do predictive forecasting and determine whether there's fire risk from their standpoint as an electric provider. If there are, they may determine that there's a need to shut down power in certain areas that run across certain grids. So with that, they will try to do a 2-day notification before the power is shut off, and then they'll do a 1-day notification, and then the power would be shut off. Once power is shut off, it depends on the weather conditions and how long the conditions last for the timeline to bring it back up. If there's damage to the infrastructure or potential damage to the infrastructure, that timeline may be extended with where they're going to go out with crews and evaluate. The reason for bringing it to the committee is just information sharing, because it's come up. This has been going on for a while, but it's gotten some attention lately because it could affect healthcare providers and healthcare facilities. So there's no, for the Edison power grids, from looking at them, there's not a logical grid pattern which we would consider logical. So you look at some areas in the canyon may be shut off, but a little bit of that may run through a city, and so it may affect some healthcare facilities. So we have processes in place to deal with this when this happens. I'll give you an example of an incident that happened where we received notification, we mapped it out on GIS mapping, we found there were two healthcare facilities that were in the zone. One of them was a long-term care subacute, so we called the facility, talked to the administrator, confirmed that they had generator power, they had fuel, they had a plan, and we also did a patient count for acute, non-acute, and how many patients were on vent, so that we could start to put plans in place and prepare had this gone on for a long period of time. They bring in overtime staffing to work through the night to make sure the patients are taken care of. So all of this infrastructure already exists. The communication systems are in place. Control One gets notified. Hospitals get notified. We get notified. And we all talk and circle around with each other and make sure that everyone's on the same page. So really, this is just a reminder for healthcare facilities to review their plans and procedures for emergency preparedness and make sure that everyone's aware in the system and clear up any confusion. In the attached one-page brief, there's also links, so if you wanted to find out more information, there's links to Edison about this and stuff. So if you have any questions, I can answer them.
Do you know if shutting down the grid will affect cell phone systems, landlines, emergency medical communication systems, et cetera?
I think it could if the grid that was on that, but there are redundant communication systems and power supplies for the county. So,
and I'm assuming, although I don't want to assume, that law enforcement agencies have also been consulted.
Yeah, so this this not just affects healthcare, it affects the entire system. So the Orange County Emergency Management Center is also involved in this, and we communicate with them. So they'll do situational surveys and assessments of cities, and they'll also put out notification for anywhere from public works to law enforcement to healthcare facilities and our agency.
Thank you.
I'd just make a comment that I work at Mission Hospital down in South County, and there was a blackout several years ago where we had power off for about 8 hours. And a couple of things that were eye-openers for me is that, you know, one, most of the hospitals in Orange County were built a long time ago. And the emergency generators that we have, you know, we have specific red plugs that we know are going to provide power for life support systems. But all of our hospital computer systems were not up. They were not even in place at that time. And so one of the things we realized is that many of our printers, many of our computer systems for doing order entry, that sort of thing, did not have power. And we were scrambling. One of our maintenance guys ran down to the Home Depot and bought as many extension cords as he could. So rather than keeping grandma on a ventilator, no, just kidding, we would use the, we would use those red plugs in a room and string it over to our work area because we were paralyzed. You don't have to go completely on paper, even though our computers still worked if we had power. And then the second piece of it is, you know, typically in Southern California, this is going to happen when we have Santa Ana wind conditions, which means it's going to be extremely hot. And most healthcare facilities, their air conditioning systems are not on the generators, or maybe a small fraction of them are, say, for the ORs or critical infrastructure, but the general hospital is not. So if the power's off for days, it could get pretty sweltering in there as well. So we'll keep our fingers crossed that we don't have prolonged power outages, but, you know, the Santa Ana winds in September, October, November can go on for days and days at a time and be pretty fierce, and so we'll have to see how this plays out.
Those are good points, and I think that's why it's worth talking about. We're pushing it through all of our committees, our hospital, our healthcare emergency management committees that deal with this as well, to talk about some of these implications and, hey, you need to go back and look at your emergency operation plans and look at your critical infrastructure and make sure those things like printers and computers are, if those are a necessity for the facility, that those are going to be powered up as well. Yeah. And if not, then what's the plan? So,
and from the fire chief's perspective as well, that's what we would encourage all healthcare agencies, hospitals, urgent cares, care facilities to make sure that there is a plan in place. Because if something like that goes down, usually fire, law enforcement are stretched thin at that point too. So this is a good time, since we've had a little bit of a lull and a slow ramping up into our summer months, to make sure those redundancies are in place. And at least that discussion is happening amongst the executive level and getting down to your staff level. So as this trends out and this public safety power supply shutoff occurs, at least everybody from the top down and vice versa understands what's going on. Second, do you happen to know if there is a long period of time where it is shut down and, for example, hospitals are bringing crews to augment the system, whatever it may be, is there any options for reimbursement through the state for those additional services that are brought in?
I do not believe, unless there was a declared state of emergency, that there would be compensation for that. So if it was a short period of time without a declared emergency, then there would be no funding source to supplement that.
Do you know how the 9/11 system will be affected?
As far as?
If you shut the power off.
Well, I mean, there could be, and I think that's why this is an important discussion, and that we bring through our healthcare coalition, our health emergency management programs for all facilities that are anywhere from hospice, long-term care, dialysis, is because our kind of thing we want to prevent is them reverting to calling 911 to move patients out of a facility because they didn't have a plan and weren't prepared.
No, of course, but if I live out in Silverado Canyon and you shut my grid down, and there's an emergency, whether it's law enforcement or healthcare emergency, and I dial 911, and my phone system isn't working, that could be a problem.
Right. I mean, if communication systems are down, then that's a problem. If it goes on prolonged and there are system impacts and public safety's stretched as far as resource, then, yeah, everything's going to be prolonged, potentially.
You know, a lot of people have gotten rid of their home telephones and just live on cell phones. Yeah, and
we don't have home.
You know, the cellular towers do not have generators. They have battery systems, but those batteries are only good for a certain number of hours. And right. then, you know, once that battery's dead, if the power's still off, you're not going to have cell service in that immediate area.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah, there's always opportunity for drills and exercises, and just for everyone's knowledge here, as the health emergency management program and the health EM system, we do exercises regularly that test healthcare facility emergency operation plans, communications infrastructures, and such. So sometimes those drills and exercises fold in many, many components of the system. We involve the ambulance providers, and then we fold in many different scenarios that affect power or create patient surge or things like that and have to do with evacuation. So we test these types of concepts on multiple levels already, and the cities do too, and we integrate with the cities as well, yeah.
Fascinating with some deep implications, almost a practice for when there's a big earthquake that we lose power for days. You know, at least people will think about their, you know, redundant systems and safety. I think the dialysis clinic is key because there's so many people that get hemodialysis that go every other day, and I don't believe a lot of those have backup generator systems.
Actually, a few do. This was a project I engaged in when I first got here, and there are it's very hit and miss. Some dialysis centers have generators. Some have plugs where you can hook up a generator if someone sends them a generator. But yeah, is there a what would you say company wide or system wide? Commitment to generators at all these dialysis centers, the answer is no.
And then the other fear that I have is that it's going to overwhelm the EMS system because you can't go to urgent cares, can't go to your doctor's office, people get sick, they're all going to go to the ERs and pandemonium. Anyhow, more to follow. Thanks for the update. I really appreciate it. Any final questions on that?
When is this actually to be implemented?
This has already been implemented and has been ongoing. I think that our reason for putting it in now is that some people weren't aware of it, and so we want to just make sure that that education's out there and that there are systems in place where we communicate and plan and prepare for these types of things.
Great. And then lastly is under new business, state regulations for specialty critical care systems, STEMI and stroke.
Yeah, this sort of a little bit of history. The idea of having stroke centers and heart attack centers is something that sort of evolved. There wasn't a sort of a clear mandate from the state that this was a good practice and all LEMSAs, all local emergency medical services agencies should do it. It's something that sort of evolved over time. Certain centers, certain entities said that, gee, I wonder if we should do something like this. So, yeah, let's try moving it forward. Orange County turned out to be a leader in this. We were one of the first ones to actually put together a system-wide process for handling strokes and heart attacks. And in this, the more and more the state got involved, but it was very much dependent on how many resources you had and what each local emergency medical agency wanted to do. So finally, the state did get involved, albeit belatedly, and created a set of requirements, regulation now that affects stroke and heart attack centers. So going forward, starting July 1st, so we're past it, any entity that decides that they wish to have a stroke system or a heart attack system must follow these guidelines. Fortunately for us, most of these guidelines are actually based on what we have here. So we're 80% already compliant. But there are a few things that are new that we have not done, or where our regulations are more vague than the state, and so we'll have to bring our STEMI and stroke regulations up to speed. It's not going to be particularly difficult, but it will create a slight more administrative burden on some of these centers. But the good news is it's not a cost prohibitive. It's not like we have to bring in new CAT scanners or new extra specialists or any of that stuff. They all have the equipment and the staff and already in place and already credentialed. Now it's just a matter of sort of tightening up those regulations a little bit, and that'll be forthcoming. But I don't anticipate a major impact, and I would be really surprised if any of the centers drop out because of this.
How are these regulations being disseminated to the various centers?
We get them. Every LEMSA gets them, and then basically we have multiple meetings across the county where we let people know that this is going on, that these will be held accountable. Mr. Johnson, who is our facilities coordinator, makes sure that these things get disseminated to all the facilities. So there's multiple ways this information gets disseminated.
And then they don't actually have to implement these things until they come up for their recertification. So if you've got another 2 years from now, then
you've got
time to do that. Yeah. So there's not an immediate. I was talking with Carl, Dr. Schultz before the meeting about really is there any substantial changes. And, you know, we have a pretty tight system already with our data collection, et cetera. So it should be a pretty seamless transition. There'll be some counties that'll be a real challenge because they don't have that. They'll have to implement a lot, but I think in Orange County we should be fine and shouldn't affect any of our centers.
There is one set of regulations that came out on something called emergency medical services for children, which at this time we've opted not to implement per the specific structure, so a system like a stroke and STEMI system. However, we are very concerned and involved with looking at the individual regulations and making sure that we have something equally as effective. For instance, with the upgrading of CHOC, the Children's Hospital of Orange County, now to a full base station, as a CCERC, as a children's trauma center. So there's a lot of things that are in those regs that, in fact, we already have or are in the process of doing. So we are still reviewing these, and there are some changes we will probably make in order to be compliant with the regulations without actually implementing the formal system in Orange County.
Yeah. Great. Any questions from any of the committee members on that? Next, we'll go to member comments. Would any of the members of the committee have any comments or questions?
I have one. I just wanted to give a report. The second earthquake that occurred prompted a little bit of work in the ambulance world, in that we received a request from the RDMC to do polling in assessing resources that were available to respond to help the hospital in Ridgecrest should the need arise for the evacuation, as well as support the community response. And so our coordinator, Bill Weston at Care Ambulance, organized our protocol, which includes a polling of all resources. The results of that were four strike teams comprised of one strike team leader and five ambulances, so 20 ambulances, were offered up as available from Orange County. One strike team was actually placed on standby. I don't believe it actually deployed. It remained on standby for 12 hours. But in that event, on that moment's notice, at least we were able to muster up 20 ambulances. What's really good about that is that would not have impacted any of the in-service ambulances serving the county. So that was a good exercise. I wanted to bring that just FYI, and then also the industry will be participating in an actual ground disaster preparedness exercise involving patient transport out at the Joint Air Force Base on July 18th. So there's some activity there in preparation with dovetailing to the earlier report. So that's it. Thank you.
Any other comments or questions? Pardon me. Next is a public forum. Is any anybody that's here, no request for speaking. With that, our next meeting is Friday, October 11th at 9 a.m. in this building. And have a safe summer, and hopefully we have power all summer. Thank you.